Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, prescribing hope for healthy families here on American Family Radio. Here's your host, Professor, Pediatric Nurse Practitioner, and Mom of Four, Dr. Jessica Peck.
Well, hey there, friends, and welcome to my favorite part of the afternoon, getting to spend time with you, prescribing hope for healthy families. Now, let's have a check-in. How is everybody feeling? We are on the eve of one of the most consequential presidential elections, if not the most consequential presidential elections of our lifetime. And I know as a community, as a country, as a people, as families, we are all like, let's do this thing. We are ready to see the political ads go away. We are ready to see all of those sign waving locations and all of the pressure and dialogue. But you know, the topics that are driving the passion behind this election, they are not going away. And we are going to talk about the election today. We have been talking about it, but we are here. It is crunch time, and we've got some really important information and resources to share with you, because now is your time. You still have time to make a plan to vote tomorrow, and I hope that we'll be able to encourage you to do that. I have a great guest going to talk about some research, but hang on, because before we do that, let's all do a little self-care, okay? I know that everyone is feeling anxious about the election. Research tells me that about 17% of all adults say that actually the election is making them lose sleep. A significant other portion of the respondents were lying. Okay, no, I'm kidding. But it is impacting us all. So let's take just a second. And I have some good news to share with you. And we are approaching the Christmas season. You know, if you listen all the time, that I absolutely love Christmas and would love to celebrate it all year long. But we have the Operation Christmas Child coming up. This is such a great way to handle some of that anxiety that you may be having about the election. National Collection Week is already starting. So now through November 25th, you can send the good news of Jesus Christ to children all over the world through a simple shoebox gift. And every one of those shoeboxes is an opportunity to share about Jesus Christ and God's love. If you've ever seen any of the videos of kids opening up those boxes, it is so heartwarming. And this is something I participate in every year. I have already picked up all of my boxes and will be going to shop for those this week. And it's a great way for you to get your kids involved. Even little kids can do this. So what I recommend is, you know, you can see what age your kids are and have them go shop for an age that is, for a child that's a similar age and same gender as they are, what would they like to have? And seeing that this is their whole Christmas. So you can pack your shoebox now. You can use any standard size shoebox, or you can get a shoebox from a collection center. If you want to know more about this, you can go to SamaritansPurse.org/OCC. That's SamaritansPurse.org/OCC. This is a great way to have a community event. You could invite your neighbors over. You could do it with your church. You could do it as a family service night. It is just so exciting. And you can pay a $7 donation to help ship that box. And you can even follow that box. Sometimes you will be able to know where that goes, and you might even be able to see where your gift ended up, which is a really exciting thing. So in this age of, okay, we're all anxious, all tense, think about serving others. Think about ways that you can give back to your community, that you can, it's so much better to give than to receive. And so I encourage you to do that. The other thing I want to make sure to tell you is that AFR, American Family Radio, will be coming to you live tomorrow evening as the election results start to come in. So you can start to listen at 6 p.m. Central Time right here on AFR, and they will have some election coverage for you. We also have featured iVoterGuide.com, so you can go to iVoterGuide.com. So easy to do. I actually used this myself to vote, went to the website, put in my address, and it brought up everybody who was on the ballot on my local election, who was in my county, my city, all of those things were there, and it gave me information about those candidates and the issue. So when you're thinking about making your plan to vote, you can go to ivoterguide.com and get great information on that will guide your vote. So now that we're back to the election, yes, we're going to talk about that. We have a guest today, Dr. Adam Rasmussen. He is a fellow at the Cultural Research Center and the Dean of the College of Arts and Humanities at Arizona Christian University. Now, Dr. Rasmussen draws upon his 25 years of experience in Christian education to inspire students to thrive under the Lordship of Christ in all aspects of their lives. He has a passion for helping students connect their faith with reason and culture, and he guides them to make meaningful and relevant connections that go beyond mere academic study. This is part of the beauty of faith in higher education. He is a magna cum laude graduate of Northwestern College. He has a bachelor's in history, a master's in educational ministries from Wheaton, a PhD in educational studies with a focus on leadership and administration from the Talbot School of Theology at Biola. He is very smart, and we are going to be professors on here for you today, but we're going to talk about those things and research that is really a pulse on what is happening with the American people and at what it means for people of faith. So Dr. Rasmussen, thank you so much for joining us. We are so glad to have you.
Dr. Peck, it's wonderful to be with you, and greetings from sunny Arizona.
I was just in Arizona a week and a half ago, and it was sunny. It was absolutely beautiful. But Dr. Rasmussen, there were political ads like you would not believe. I couldn't even turn on the local news without seeing inundation from that. But tell us a little bit about yourself first and what you do and the hope that you have for teaching this next generation of students.
Well, I'd love to. Yes, at Arizona Christian University, we're right in the middle of a wonderful semester. We've got football, we've got basketball, we have students that are enjoying their studies, they're meeting outside in the beautiful weather, and I have the opportunity to lead some of them in the classes I teach, and then also to work with our amazing faculty as we help people live biblically changed lives. We're a culturally and theologically conservative university. We're not affiliated with any church or denomination. And I've been there now 9 years, and I feel so aligned with the message that we bring, a message of hope, a message of courage in this time. And, you know, we have about 1,400 students. We've been growing these last 8 or 9 years. It's really exciting. And that's what I'm up to, and my life is full. I'm so blessed.
Well, you know, I always love to talk about that because there is so much negative news about higher education, about this generation of kids, Gen Z, coming up. And we get to see the good parts of that. We get to see hope, and we get to see a lot of kids who really want to do a lot of good in the world. And that's always encouraging to me to hear. Well, tell us about the Cultural Research Center there at Arizona Christian University and what kind of work that you're doing.
I'm happy to do that. At the Cultural Research Center, we have at the center of that Dr. George Barna, who's been studying biblical worldview in America since 1995. And we acquired him about half a dozen years ago. He's a professor. And what we do is we explore national trends. It has to do with child rearing. It has to do with, like we're going to talk about today, politics. Mm-hmm. It could look at mental health, those type of things. And we measure it against basically what does the Bible say? So there are some basic doctrines within the biblical worldview that we want to see how is America squaring up to that. And we look at in this particular study that we're doing, we're looking at voting or apathy towards voting and how it relates to going to church, how it relates to what you believe about God and the Bible, how you behave if you don't believe in those things. So it's really exciting. Every single month, we are putting up new information to the culturalresearchcenter.com, It's free. You can search it. You can follow up on some of the things that Dr. Peck and I are talking about today and see it for yourself.
Well, you know, we have had Dr. George Barna on the show talking about his newest book, Raising Spiritual Champions, Nurturing Your Child's Heart, Mind, and Soul. And it was such a great conversation. And Dr. Rasmussen, I've already given you a heads up that I give my listeners a disclaimer, because while Dr. Barna is doing really good work, there is one point of contention between us that we have discussed very openly. And that is that he is so, unfortunately, a Yankees fan. And I am a diehard Houston Astros fan. But I feel like with the outcome of the World Series, somehow we're going to find common ground there. I do give my sympathies to Dr. Barna for his Yankees losing the World Series. No, but in all seriousness, really, Dr. Barna is doing such good research to say what is going on. And this research that you just had come out says that this season is marked by a significant drop in voter enthusiasm among Christian voters. And according to this research, only 51% of people of faith are likely to vote this November. What is going on? What is driving the drop in enthusiasm for voters who identify as people of faith?
Dr. Peck, this amount of research that we've done, this particular report is going global. I've done interviews with people from the United Arab Emirates. I've interviewed with people in Australia. I've been looking forward to talking with you about it. It is a shocker. And we know that the outcome of the Trump-Harris election will depend on turnout and voting enthusiasm, no matter what you're seeing on the television or hearing on the radio. It's significantly lower than 2020. And as you mentioned, of the 268 million Americans of voting age, 104 million people of faith are unlikely to vote. And right in the heart of that, which I think American Family Radio listeners want to know about, are the 32 million self-identified Christians who regularly attend church, but they aren't going to vote. 32 million.
That's a lot.
And that is a lot. And sometimes what we've noticed is that some churches have distanced themselves from the election. They're not even encouraging their congregants to vote. They're avoiding teaching on key social issues. And we can drill down into those specifics wherever you want to go with that on your show. But this is alarming. I mean, the apathy among church-going Christians, that 32% are basically saying, not for me, not this election. Mm-hmm. I'm going to sit out.
You know, for me, in looking at that, I agree. It is very alarming, but it wasn't that shocking to me. And I feel like, you know, for me, I teach health policy and I teach nurses health policy. And when my students come into the class, I poll them about how they're feeling about learning about health policy. And the number one word that they use in those surveys is dread. They dread coming into my course. They do not want to take health policy. And it's almost like these nurses, they wear a badge of honor saying, I am apolitical, because politics in some ways is viewed as so divisive and so nasty. And they want to stay above that. Like, I want to just give people good care. I don't want to be involved in that. I just want to, you know, focus on my patients. And honestly, Dr. Rasmussen, I see that translation occurring very easily for people of faith, thinking that is so ugly, that is so divisive. I don't want to be involved in that. And I see a lot of people saying that they're going to sit out. But I would tell my fellow Christians, my fellow people of faith, the same thing that I tell my nursing students, that policy drives practice, and in our everyday lives, policy very deeply impacts our everyday, day-to-day life. And while you might say, I don't want to choose, right now, at this very moment, no matter where you are, there is someone in a room somewhere who is having a conversation, making decisions that will definitely impact your everyday life. how you spend your money, what you're able to do with your insurance, what issues of free speech and life and all of those things that are going to impact your life. So when we come back, let's drill down and talk about why Christians aren't voting and should churches be talking about this or not. We'll dive right in when we come back after this break. Don't go away. We'll be right back with Dr. Rasmussen from Arizona Christian University. See you in a minute. You've heard a lot about saving babies on this show. That's because it's important to me personally. And let me just be frank with you, we need to save them. That is why we've partnered with Preborn, the nation's leader in introducing mothers with unplanned pregnancies to their babies. And once she hears that heartbeat and sees that precious life growing inside of her, she is twice as likely to choose life. Now that is a miracle. But quite honestly, if we don't save them, who will? Preborn receives no government funding, so their work is completely dependent on us. Preborn has rescued over 280,000 babies, and that's not all. They provide love, support, and counseling for up to 2 years for free, saving lives and souls. One ultrasound is just $28, or 140 helps to rescue 5 babies. Abortion doesn't stop, so we can't. Together, you and I can save lives. Just call #250 on your cell and say the keyword baby. That's 250 baby, or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
When I take a step back, I can see it. The pain, all the fear we've been feeling, losing sight of the thing that we're needing, that we're needing. Honestly, I think we just need Jesus. Honestly, I think we just need Jesus. Have we all gone mad? Have we lost our minds? Where it used to be wrong, we say Jesus.
Welcome back, friends. I couldn't think of a better way to say it myself, because in this day of cultural chaos and election craziness that we are all ready for the political ads to be over and for the constant news coverage, for the feeling like we have to check our phones every 5 minutes to see what kind of chaos has erupted in the 5 minutes that we stepped away to try to find peace. Honestly, we do just need Jesus. That song is by Tarian. And I'm talking today to Dr. Adam Rasmussen from the College of Arts and Humanities at Arizona Christian University. He's here to share with us some of the research that has just been released led by Dr. George Barna, that says that 32 million regular churchgoers are not planning to vote in 2024. And that is some of you. And so I encourage you, this is the last call. Election day is tomorrow. If you don't have a plan to vote, please make a plan to vote. Your voice matters in this. Your vote matters in this. I remember my husband's grandfather is a World War II veteran, and when he was in his late 90s, I brought him to my daughter's fourth grade class, and we interviewed him, and we were asking him what message he wanted to convey, and his message was, please, when you are old enough to vote, vote, because that vote cost the lives of men and women who served and who died on our behalf to give us the freedom to do that. But there are a lot of reasons that Christians aren't voting. And so, Dr. Rasmussen, what research did you find? What answers did you find as to why they're just saying, you know what, I think I'm just going to sit it out this time?
Well, I'll give you three. 68% have a lack of interest in politics and elections. 57% dislike all the major candidates. 48% believe the election outcome will be rigged. And you and I need to just realize that all of life is all for Jesus. And I think it boils down to people not finding pleasure in certain things. I don't, it's not pleasant to me to get involved in any kind of
political. No.
Not pleasant to me to do this responsibility. It's actually a responsibility. If you don't vote, that's a vote. And we need to understand that the cumulative impact of pastors, people with broadcasts like yours, others reaching Christians, we could activate up to 5 million regular churchgoers. So 1/6 of those who are saying that they're not going to vote might actually vote based on our research. And that could make a huge difference in the election. When you break it down, there are 93 electoral votes in 7 states, and you know what they are. And last election cycle, it was just 60,000 votes in one state. I mean, it can really make a difference. But the main thing is, are you going to exercise that right, like you were talking about, Dr. Peck? Are you going to exercise that right? The best time to exercise it is when it's difficult. It's very easy to just sit back and just watch all the rest of your rights go away, and the rights for your children and your grandchildren, as you mentioned. The time for Christians to exercise their rights is when it's difficult and when it's not pleasant. We need to be salt and light.
That's a great encouragement. And, you know, I think we need to encourage the people in our circles to vote as well, because we do have influence over our family, our friends, maybe people we work with, but each one of us stewards a circle of influence. And I know my circle of influence right now, I've got two children who are voting in their first presidential election. So I made sure they had everything they needed. They were registered. They know where to go and make sure they can get there. And I think sometimes we underestimate our ability to influence those around us. So maybe let's talk for a minute to those people who say, yeah, I hear, I've voted, but nobody around me is voting. What advice would you give them on how to motivate and encourage their fellow Christians to go out and vote?
Well, if we just look at the world, what we see is something very strange going on. The Washington Post has endorsed a Democratic candidate since 1988. And for the first time since then, they said, oh, we're not going to participate. And then the International Brotherhood of Teamsters did the same thing. And they have endorsed the Democrat since 1996. So it's the world is saying, I'm out. So as Christians, are we to take our cue from the world or from the Word? And God wants us to be engaged in all of life. It's not like we say, oh, I'll give God my Sundays, but the Mondays, those are for me. Or it's not that we'd say, oh, I'll give God my family, but my entertainment is mine. No, all of life, including politics. So bring it under the lordship of Jesus, pray, and do the hard work of making yourself do something that's not comfortable. The other way is the world's way, which is, yeah, I'm only going to do it if it pleases me. And that would be the encouragement that I would give to any other believers that haven't voted yet. It's not easy. We're not telling you who to vote for. It's not easy. We're telling you to take those biblical principles, pray, and apply them in this sphere and always in this sphere and in every sphere of life.
And, you know, I feel like in this day and age, when we are in a world that is saturated by screens and smartphones, we are constantly receiving election news and updates. That comes through social media. You can't watch a sports game without some political ad coming on. You can't watch any streaming services without a political ad coming on. I mean, there's just constantly information that is being fed to us. But there has been a controversy and, to some degree, a silence from large sectors of the church and a reluctance to speak into this. Now, I'm not talking about churches engaging politically, but even just so far as addressing the issues that are driving the candidates' platforms. I mean, it's really kind of a disconnect, because if you go on each candidate's platforms, there are very much issues there that are informed by a biblical worldview, by our faith, by our personal beliefs, by our values. And yet there's this disconnect of, oh, but we're going to have, you know, not talk about those issues. and the church. And so what did you see as far as your research talking about the role of the church in this political landscape?
Well, there are seven things that churches can do, and I won't refer to all of them, but I will say that if you want to learn more, go to theculturalresearchcenter.com. And we saw that the political and election-related activity undertaken by churches can influence people, but some of the topics that they should be touching on, for example, that's one of the things they can do, is they could talk about these topics of religious freedom and poverty and abortion, crime and law and order and the government, Israel, transgenderism, immigration, artificial intelligence. So one of the things that they can do, churches can talk about those topics because the Bible speaks on all of those. Another is the second thing that churches can do, other election-related actions by churches, is to take the simplest election-related action, which is to encourage congregants to vote. But what we found is that it was only barely half of the churches, 56%, even did that. So we really need to understand that we can do better. And I do not think it's too late, even though we're in the 11th hour, so to speak. But we need to learn from this experience and do better next time.
It is such an interesting disconnect, because I've already early voted. So I'm going to say I voted. I'm practicing what I am preaching. But I voted in a church. And churches are a large point of community access. And, you know, in the community, they provide services and space. And that's a way that churches can serve their community. They're not endorsing a political candidate, but just simply making their space available, which is great, because that's what churches are, a welcoming space for the community. And so being able to do that, but it's kind of a strange disconnect feeling, Dr. Rasmussen, to feel like, okay, I'm going in to vote in the church, but we're not talking about the election at all or any of the issues, but yet you can still vote here. So to your point, I think we need to be better about this. We need to be more intentional about this and thinking about it, because there's very high stakes and low turnout for this election, because these things do impact our families. And I think about parents who have children at home. And what would you say to those families who are trying to steward their children through watching all of these confusing messages? And I've talked about this before too, when we look at even going back so far as Israel wanting a king, you know, they had an idea of what they wanted. They wanted someone tall and good looking, and you know, and that was Saul, and he ended up hiding among the luggage. So we're definitely flawed human beings. But what would you say to families who have kids at home? What are the stakes? What's at stake for them?
Oh, that's such a great question. I mean, we are to teach our children, aren't we? We're not to allow the world to come in. We need to protect them. We need to guide them, especially the youngest among us. And then when they get older, we want to have that dialogue of wisdom all the way through until we go and meet Jesus. So we have that responsibility. There's so much, Dr. Peck, we can teach our children about living in this nation. And I think the first thing comes to the fact that our citizenship is in heaven. And because of that, we have a special place on this planet. We know that our citizenship in Jesus Christ is secure. Therefore, we can be in the world, but not of it. We can be salt and light. We can be different. We should care deeply about our leaders, 1 Timothy 2:1 and 2. We need to be salt and light, as I mentioned, Matthew 5:13. We need to seek the good of our nation as a whole. We need to know about America, Jeremiah 29:5-6. And that's the second point. America is the great experiment. This is a constitutional democratic republic, and what a great place to be with our Constitution kind of being the frame around the great picture of the Declaration of Independence, which four times mentions God as our creator and our rights, which can never be given to us by a government. They can only be protected, not given. They're given to us by our creator. So I think the second thing we should do is not only teach our responsibility to our children as citizens of heaven, but as citizens of the United States of America. Our children should know what it means to work in a system like this with checks and balances and why that's so wonderful. They should be taught our history and why we need to know from the founding all of the story, the big story, and some of the failures of our society, maybe even the election of 2024. I hope not, but it may have been a failure with the church. We're going to look at that. We'll do a post-op on this as well. So I think we need to teach both of those things. And at Arizona Christian University, we are pro-Bible. We believe the Bible is the Word of God and fully authoritative. And we also are very pro-Constitution of the United States. Some schools are not that way, but we believe that God has given us a special blessing in this country. And so we should be informed about the history of our country. We should be informed about our freedoms as Americans, and we should exercise it. We shouldn't be like the world. We need to be encouraging each other to love and good deeds. I think the Apostle Paul, the Lord Jesus, all of them in this day and age would be looking at all of these things. We think of Daniel in the court, and we think of Isaiah as well. So not all of us are called to work in Washington, D.C. or in our state capital, but all of us are called to be engaged in these things.
Oh, absolutely. And I think about the well-known quote, the hand that rocks the cradle rules the world. And there are so many parents who are doing that important work of guiding their children who may be future legislators or presidents or influencers or businessmen and women, whatever they may be. But I think you remind us of a really important point, because what I see is this constant doom scrolling, you know, parents, me included, who struggle with scrolling through their phone and seeing this apocalyptic language that the world is going to end, you know, depending on how the election goes. But we have to remember that God is not pacing the throne room of heaven, the floor of the throne room of heaven, saying, oh my goodness, what's going to happen now? Oh, I'm so nervous. I'm so afraid. No, we serve a God who is in control. And no matter what happens in our country, in our world, that he cares for us, he loves us. And we know that in this world, we will have trouble, but we can take heart and be of good cheer because God has overcome the world. And you talked about the Bible. I think there are so many encouraging words and words of wisdom that we can find. And I think of a scripture from Isaiah 26, verse 3, you will keep in perfect peace those whose minds are steadfast because they trust in you. And no matter what happens in this election, that is what we need to remember. And if we're looking for peace, God gives us the answer right here. Trust in the Lord and he will keep your mind steadfast and give you perfect peace. Well, Dr. Rasmussen, when we come back, I want to talk about some of the research that has come out from Arizona Christian University connecting biblical worldview or a lack thereof to poor mental health outcomes in kids. This is something I've actually been talking about quite a bit, talking about how kids, when they don't have a firm foundation, when they don't have confidence in absolute truth and things that will never change and things that are celebrated today are canceled tomorrow, and they have the pressure of creating their own truth and coming up with their own worldview where anything goes, I firmly believe that that causes a lot of anxiety and uncertainness and unrest. And it was so gratifying to see some of that research put language to what I've been seeing. So we'll talk more about that when we come back with Dr. Adam Rasmussen from Arizona Christian University. We'll see you on the other side of this break.
My father, your great-grandfather, fought in World War II.
Really?
He was a gunner on the big ship out in the Pacific Ocean.
Wow.
Your great-grandmother did her part, too.
Was she on a ship?
Oh, no. She stayed back home. She and a lot of her friends worked really hard in a factory because the men had gone off to war.
Ooh.
And they held scrap metal drives to help in the war effort. The folks back home were heroes, too.
Here at the American Family Association, we consider you the heroes back home. As you fulfill your responsibility of caring for your family day to day, your partnership with us is crucial as we fight the enemies of freedom in America. Thank you for your commitment to the American Family Association.
Grandpa, what's a scrap metal drive?
Let's get some cookies, and I'll tell you all about it.
Welcome back, friends. That is Made for More by Josh Baldwin. And what a great reminder. Listen, when you feel like there is a stream of apocalyptic election news coming your way, know that actually there's a fountain of grace that's running your way. You have a future and it is worth the living. And we are talking about the very future of our country. We are on the eve. We have finally arrived, friends, to the eve of a very important presidential election with a lot of down ballot implications. There are so many races that are so important that are happening tomorrow. My question to you, I have two questions for you. Number one, are you praying about this election as much as you're worrying about it? And if the answer is no, just drop what you're doing right now and pray about it. Give it to the Lord. Tell him your worries. I always say turn your cares into prayers. Just turn that internal monologue of worrying language into an open dialogue with the King of the Universe who you have access to. And the second question I have for you is, are you going to vote? Have you voted already? And if you haven't, are you going to vote? You still have time. It is not too late to vote. Tomorrow is election day. Make a plan. If you want to see what will be on your ballot, go to ivoterguide.com. That's ivoterguide.com. And you can see exactly your ballot with resources that help you to help inform you of the views of the candidates who will be on your ballot and know that your voice matters. Now, I am a policy professor, so I follow this pretty closely. And just the other day, I've been following the election results and returns coming in Nevada. We had this conversation earlier about Colorado and Colorado. So I'm just going to say it both ways so I don't offend any of you. But I saw that there was a lead by the Republican Party in Clark County that the one day that was closing last week that was just 10 votes. I mean, that is such a narrow margin. And we are seeing elections that have been decided by just a handful of people. Your voice matters. So we're talking today to Professor Dr. Adam Rasmussen from Arizona Christian University and some new research that has come from the Cultural Research Center and led by Dr. George Barna. And some of this latest research talks about worldview and the connection to mental health. So Dr. Rasmussen, tell us what you found and what you're learning about this connection.
Happy to do so. One out of every four adults, about 59 million, has some type of mental illness. And among the millennials and Gen Z, that's individuals born between 84 and 2006, it goes up. About one in every three people has a diagnosable mental disorder. Hundreds of thousands of Americans are spending tens of millions of dollars and numerous hours investing in drugs and mental health solutions that might be treating the wrong problem. Among adults who admit to frequently struggling with anxiety, depression, and fear, those are often symptoms of an unhealthy worldview. Instead of mental health treatments, the best prescription is a more reliable and proven worldview. Not everyone's mental health issues are caused by worldview deficiencies. Some mental impairments are due to chemical imbalances or genetic issues, physical or biological challenges, but a failure to recognize the consequences of harmful worldview may produce costly, futile, and potentially debilitating misdiagnoses.
You know, I am seeing the rise in mental health conditions. The anxiety, the depression that these younger generations are feeling is very, very real. It is there. It is happening. And I'm glad to hear you say and acknowledge that sometimes that is a biological presentation. It's a complex interaction of your genes, your environment, your biology, all of those things. And sometimes that really happens. But looking at the contributing factors and looking for me, I'm a nurse practitioner, so I always think about prevention and health promotion and thinking about what is the worldview of kids who are feeling so anxious. I said before the break, Dr. Rasmussen, that I see kids, what we see on the ground is we know from research too that suicide is now the second leading cause of death for young people in this country, second only behind accident. And what I realized is that some kids in today's generation, they are more afraid of living than they are of dying. Death seems less scary than living in a world that is constantly changing, where no values are absolute, where truth is relative, where they have no idea what to expect, when anything can be flipped on its head. And then you throw in, you know, everything that happened with COVID and feeling like every structural, societal, social norm was upended for them. We do see that kids with boundaries do better. And, you know, this is one of the researchers that I was thinking about and doing. There was a research study that looked at kids actually on a playground. Dr. Rasmussen, they looked at kids who had a fence around the playground. And when they had the fence, I've talked about this study before, they ran to the edge, you know, they had no problems playing. But when you remove those barriers, they huddle together in the middle. And there's anxiety there. And I think boundaries are good and boundaries in our worldview. So what's the solution here? What are the unbiblical beliefs that may be contributing to that lack of certainty in what people believe?
Well, yeah, let's take that analogy a little higher too. Let's imagine that we're on a 50-story skyscraper playing basketball without a fence around it.
Ooh, that scares me.
It does scare you. So people want to say, I just want to be my own person. Don't give me any rules on sex or on how I spend my money or my language or what I do with my time. Give me no boundaries at all. Well, you're not going to have a very free game of basketball. Basketball is about, you know, making baskets and opposing your opponent and whoever has the most baskets wins. Well, without a fence around it, all you're thinking about is all that scary stuff. So we need to have that moral frame that you're talking about of what's right and wrong. And the only way I can see that logically happening is from the eternal. It doesn't come from the temporal. It doesn't come from the individual. These are things that we discover, just like we discover gravity. It just is. So we've known this for generations. And most religions point this out. We contend that the biblical religion is the truth, and Jesus Christ being raised from the dead brings light and immortality to life, as Paul said. And so all the other faiths are showing some of those truths, but the absolute truth, as you're mentioning, is needed for humans to flourish. And what we've discovered is that if you look at the incidents, let's just look at anxiety, depression, and fear. Just remember ADF. So it's a moderate to strong inverse correlation, meaning that when one thing goes up, the other goes down. It's inverse. So the more biblical worldview you have, the higher that goes, the lower the incidence of anxiety, depression, and fear. So unfortunately, the younger you are, the less of a biblical worldview that you have. So among the Gen Zers, they have 1% of a biblical worldview, and they have a huge amount of anxiety, depression, and fear, 56%. So you can see that the lower the biblical worldview, the higher the anxiety, depression, and fear. With millennials, they have about 2% of them have a biblical worldview. Well, their anxiety, depression, and fear, therefore, go down. As the biblical worldview goes up, their depression anxiety and fear goes down. That's 49%. Gen Xers, 4% biblical worldview, 39% anxiety, depression, and fear. And then boomers, 8% biblical worldview, and then their anxiety, depression, and fear go down. So this is a wonderful thing to discover. And then it raises the question. If you have a worldview that tells you, for example, that there's a God of love at the center of the universe who created us in his image and wants to have a loving relationship with us, that the rules he gives us are not burdens, they're blessings, that we have made a mess of our lives because of our sin, but he sent his one and only son, Jesus, to give us a fresh start. And that you can have forgiveness today, and you can have meaningful relationships with other people that believe the same. That's one worldview. I think that's going to give you a lot of hope. Mm-hmm. The other one is, I would call a meta-narrative of despair. So we're an accident between two oblivions. There's really no purpose or meaning in the universe. When you're born, you kind of come into this world that is bleak and dark, and when you die, that's it. So make the best of it. You have to figure it out for yourself. You're adrift and alone. Of course, you're going to have problems trying to figure out all kinds of things about yourself that you were never supposed to try to figure out. You're supposed to be instructed and loved and formed. But young people are, they're getting so many mixed messages, as you've already pointed out, Dr. Peck. And therefore, their feelings match what they believe.
That I wrote down what you just said, a meta narrative of despair. That is a really good way to characterize it. And we see that in the pessimism about having children and worries about the climate and all of this doomsday kind of talk that happens. And you present the alternative. And I think often, you know, well, people will say, what if you're wrong? I think, well, what if I am wrong? I have no regrets. I am living absolutely with no regrets, because when you look at the outcome of eternity, the stakes are so high. And that's the message for us, is making sure as parents that we are imparting a biblical worldview to our kids. Now, I want to, just for clarity's sake, read a specific statement out of the press release that came out of this, because I want to make sure that I'm really clear about this. And this comes from your press release from Arizona Christian. The research regarding worldview and mental health led Barna and his colleagues to caution readers neither to dismiss the reality of mental illness nor to devalue the importance of conventional mental health protocols. There are certainly many situations that merit conventional mental health treatments, such as counseling, prescription drugs, physical therapy, and institutionalization, Barna explained. But it does raise the possibility that there are also situations where a patient suffering from a psychological or emotional disorder attributable to worldview components that trigger and sustain the condition. Now, what in the world did all of that say? That's saying sometimes there is real anxiety and depression that may or may not be influenced by worldview. Sometimes you need a counselor, a mental health professional, and the best way through that, in my view, is through your primary care provider to see, what are you experiencing? Is it on the realm of normal human experience and emotion, or does it rise to the level of debilitating or diagnosable disorder? But the research also shows that adults with a biblical worldview, just like you said, Dr. Rasmussen, are less likely to feel anxious, depressed, or fearful. And in this world where we are seeing, I know you're seeing this too as a researcher, we're seeing millions and millions of dollars poured into mental health research. And we know that as people, we are body, mind, and spirit. Why don't we look at this and think about this, especially as a way of prevention? There's a way we can impart a biblical worldview. Well, Dr. Rasmussen, you provided so much great information and a lot of food for thought. I would love for you just to take a minute or so and share any last thoughts that you have with an encouragement for our listeners to go out and vote.
Right. Well, I after this call, I'm doing another interview up in Cincinnati. So take care and take heart to know that the message is getting out there, the message of the gospel. And we all need to continue to share the good news of Jesus in every realm. And I'll let Jesus have the last word today as I quote. And before I do that, I just want to say thank you, Dr. Peck. I hope to have another conversation with you in the future. But this is Jesus in John 14:27. He says, "Peace I leave with you, my peace I give to you. I do not give to you as the world gives. Do not let your hearts be troubled, and do not be afraid.
That's so true. And it goes on to say that God has prepared a place for us in heaven. We can have, like you said before, we are citizens of heaven. And I pray that no matter what comes in the world, you can know that we serve a God who sees, who knows, who loves, who cares, and he cares about you. I pray that you will go and use your voice to vote. And in the meantime, listen, on this last night before the election, may the Lord bless you and keep you and make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. And Lord, please give us peace. I'll see you right back here tomorrow. We're going to have a special time of prayer for the election. You won't want to miss it. I'll see you then.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.